killed Epstein, conspiracies abound. Meanwhile, the economy's dropping, China's winning the trade war, and endangered species just got that little bit more endangered. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us wherever you find podcasts, as well as on Facebook and Twitter and US of Ed. Jeffrey Epstein, convicted sex offender and a man with close ties with many rich and powerful people, including Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, has died of an apparent suicide alone in his cell, despite being under supposedly close watch. Got to admit, Ed, if this had happened in Russia, I'd be looking at it a little bit sideways. In fact, I'm still looking at it a little bit sideways now.
Well, you know, the Russians have done a lot of things, and maybe they've taught us how to do some things that they do so well. Political prisoners die in jail. So maybe there's been an exchange with the KGB showing the CIA with the local police department. So here's a case of intellectual property. And Mr. Epstein is in the intellectual trash can, as we know. He's got nothing to give at this point. But there must be some records. And those records are going to come out somewhere, somehow. And that's what everyone's afraid of. They don't have to be afraid of him anymore, but they have to be afraid of whoever has those records. And you can be sure they are around. Epstein was supposed to have kept a file on all the girls, a file on all the activities, because he was using those files to blackmail people. They did not go away. And just like with Cohen, they're going to come back to haunt people.
And of course, Donald Trump happy to retweet conspiracy theories linking the Clintons to Epstein's death, and has since said he had no idea whether Bill Clinton had anything to do with Epstein's death. Sort of a little hint there, I think, on the side. To be honest, I didn't bat an eye. This one seems just like a classic Trump diversion. It's caused a bit of a stir, but to me, it just seems like another day in Trump land.
Esther. S-H. I won't go there. We're on public radio. But stirring this stuff up is just a bunch of baloney. How much, though, can the public take of this? How much can the public take of a zoo parade, of a bunch of silliness, when you have to run a country? This is no part-time job. You have to give it full attention. And his attention span is short anyway. But now, when he has to divert it to all these other areas, with no help, by the way, he has no media spokesperson these days. Most members of his cabinet are gone, or their assistants. There's almost nobody left in the White House. People are resigning left and right. So how's he going to do? He's not going to run this like he ran his real estate empire, I don't think.
Well, he needs distractions. One thing in need of a distraction. U.S. stock markets have had their worst drop of the year this week, the Dow dropping 100 points, as some forecasters warn of increasing odds of a recession. Trump, of course, blaming Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell, labelling him as clueless. All this economic stuff, it's too hard for me, Ed. What's going on?
Well, first of all, recessions don't come overnight. This has been brewing for a very long time. The fact is, the world economy is slowing down. The U.S. economy cannot outpace its business partners. You can't sell some to somebody who doesn't have the money to buy. We're discovering that here in Australia. We don't have enough consumers out there buying items. You can't manufacture them. The first thing you do is lower the prices, and things look okay for a while. But your real profit numbers are going down, and that's what's been happening in the U.S. The real profit numbers have been going down. Everybody has their M2 watch. Everybody has their new computer. Everybody has the fridge. So what are you going to do? The Chinese manufacturing is slowing down because they don't have customers to sell their stuff to. So are they afraid of possible sanctions? Sure, they want to sell the little bit of stuff they have, but they're already dumping a whole lot of stuff in Bangladesh and India and other places at reduced prices. They're hoping to weather this out. The United States can't, and it's coming at the wrong time for Trump. is coming just before an election. And a recession before an election is always very, very bad news.
And just speaking of which, China's trade war, Trump might have saved Christmas. Facing pressure from business, he's backed off on Chinese tariffs. But it does prove these tariffs were always going to hit American consumers and doesn't put negotiations in a place of strength.
No. We've said this over and over on the show. The way you fight these this whole business of Chinese trade is to have something to trade, is to have something that people will buy. And the U.S. is running out of things that people will buy. This means some things are going to come on a lot faster than we thought, like artificial intelligence. I would anticipate that we're going to start seeing a lot more artificial intelligence stuff coming up from U.S. Markets very soon in order to boost productivity. Human productivity is on the slide. So machine productivity is the only way to go now. And there's a huge investment in this area already. It's going to climb.
And another thing that the left hand has been doing while the right hand sort of waves around and sort of claps and does all sorts of things. The Trump administration is weakening the Endangered Species Act, reducing regulatory burdens on business. It now dismisses climate change, lessens protections on critical habitat, and reduces protections for threatened species. This is really, really sad, I think it.
Well, the most threatened species is this administration. Every one of its birds is being shot by the Congress, by the public, and so on. I don't think by changing these regulations you're going to change very much behavior. A company would be foolish, particularly a developer, to defy the Threatened Species Act and build something and threaten marshland or what have you, because as soon as the new administration came in, they would be in deep doo-doo. So let's look at these things as they are. The Trumpies have a few things that they think are going to work for them, and the chances of them really working for them are slim to none. So I suspect we're looking at another tempest in a teapot. I got to give my boss something, the Secretary of Interior said, who was a lobbyist, by the way, for the coal and gas industry. So what do I do for my man? Well, I give him this, something he doesn't really need. So we are at a very, very bad time right now, a hugely bad time, where I suspect the next thing we'll be hearing about is a lot more stuff with other departments like education and so on. Because on the way out, or even on the way to the presidency, they got to show some gains, and their gains are losses for those of us who believe in good outcomes. But for them, sure, they're smart things to do. They make their people look good, and on the way out, they may have some gains.
And who says America doesn't manufacture anything anymore? They seem to be exporting inspiration in some rather tragic events. We saw the attempted mosque shooting in Norway, pretty clearly inspired by Christchurch, but following the El Paso shooting in tone, a pretty dismal failure by anyone's account, thankfully, but involved in a separate incident, the death of a young woman. Another incident here in Sydney this week, the attacker carrying a USB with info on American and New Zealand mass killings. The death of another young woman involved in that one as well. What is going on?
The same thing that went on in El Paso. The same thing that went on in Dayton. People are getting the message that this is okay, and they're being heroic. We should not put their names in the newspaper. We should say these things are atrocious, bad, etc., but give them as little air as possible, as New Zealand did. Don't let them become heroes. Because notice these things are one after another. And the reason they're one after another is because the people feel empowered at this juncture to do things that are going to help the cause. And the cause looks a little feeble, it looks a little weak, I'm going to step out there and be a hero.
And in the States, Trump trying to make some moves on gun control, it would seem?
Well, gun control is an area where you know he's been very strong for some time. Trump's record in gun control is don't control it. It's not the gun, it's the person who's sick. Well, if the person who's sick didn't have a gun, what would they have? And every time they kill somebody, again, it wasn't them that killed them, it was the vehicle, the gun. So Trump now is going to introduce some new legislation, he says, which will curb some of this. His new legislation will call for more serious background checks. Well, we've had serious background checks, but if the serious background check is in Iowa and I buy my gun in California and shoot somebody in Mississippi, how serious is that? Unless there's some universal thing like a 72-hour clearance process where you have to go through the FBI, go through all the local law enforcement, almost like immigration, all the stuff you have to do that to buy a gun, nothing really is going to happen.
And circling back on China, just wondering this week if you had any thoughts on the Hong Kong situation. Protests have been going on for a while now, and the Chinese are lined up outside the door waiting to roll in force.
They're already there.
Yeah.
The truth of the matter is they're already there. Not all those soldiers you see in Hong Kong uniforms are Hong Kong. A lot of the Hong Kong young people have already jumped ship. They said, I want to go up against my own people. So there's some imports that have come in and taken their places. So we have a situation where Hong Kong is, what would you call it, an unfree state. And the people who are making it that, the people in China, want to keep it looking like this is a Hong Kong event and not an international event. So let's call it as it is. Hong Kong is now going to go deeper into the clutches of China, not away from it. And these riots are seeding the soil.
Eyes of the world on that one. Over the next few weeks, as we mentioned last week, we started last week, at the end of each podcast, we're taking a few minutes to focus on one of the 2020 Democratic candidates.
Oh, did you say one of the 20?
It does feel a little bit that way.
20 for 2020?
Yeah. Look, this week we're talking Amy Klobuchar, who she is and where she sits.
Well, Amy is the classic Democrat. The Farmers Democratic Party in the Midwest, Wisconsin and Minnesota. She's a product of that. The Farmers Democrat that produced Hubert Humphrey. So she's a product of the Progressive Democratic Party that embraced the farmers and embraced the workers. So she's a worker, positive, lefty, but not that far to the left. I'd say much more progressive. Her big claim to fame now is her anti-gun position. And this is a serious position. She's not fooling around here. She's bringing forward legislation and having hearings, getting at the real causes of guns and gun violence. She wants to go the direction we went with cigarettes, have suits. These gun manufacturers know what damage the guns will do in the wrong hands. So I think we'll see her, before this campaign is too old, going very, very hard on guns. This separates her from the rest of the field. Other people are against guns, but they don't have a program. So I think she's separating herself very intelligently from the rest of the field. And think about this. She's from the Midwest. She's from the state, one of the states that Trump gained by a very narrow margin, Wisconsin. She's from a state that swung the other way in the last election in the midterms. She has not made anyone angry in the Democratic Party. and she has very good friends. So she needs to snuggle up a little bit with the left, kind of some of the Bernie stuff, but not too far. She can't be shrill like Camilla. She can position herself very well. And she actually looks like that woman who played the vice president on the TV show.
Certainly a lot to be made of her personal popularity. As you say, in the state of Minnesota, she is more personally popular than the Democrats are popular in terms of the polling that is being done there in Minnesota. And the New York Times, New Yorker, named Klobuchar as one of the women most likely to become the first female president of the United States. This popularity, are we setting her up? Is she being set up for a shot at the VP slot?
It's not too early to start talking about that. Because although there's been a little bit of rumbles about stuff she's done in her office, a little shrill stuff with her staff. Everybody gets angry with their staff.
Lots of turnover, apparently.
A lot of turnover in the staff. And that's pretty typical. But that means she's tough. And Hubert Humphrey was tough. So the Farmers Labor Party was never one of those wishy-washy parties. And we're in an age of Trump. So having a tough woman is good. But if they're too tough, like Camilla, and look mean-spirited, like Warren, they may have a hard time. So let's keep an eye on her. I think this is a candidate that has legs.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk the latest in U.S. news and politics. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts and find us on Twitter and Facebook at U.S. of Ed. U.S. of Ed is produced in the studios of 2SER in Sydney. Help support the work we do by going to 2SER.com/support.